Hello and welcome to the. Oh, so let's start again.
That's not a good start, is it?
Well, you forget what it's called.
Yeah. Hello and welcome to the November episode of the Natural History of Sussex with me, Graham Lyons.
Me, Michael Blenker.
And myself, Matt Davidson.
Okay, so we're looking at Naturama.
Now, actually, before we start Naturama, I know I was saying earlier, Matt, how great it was, the mixing and stuff. And it was fantastic. You did a great piece of work. Thank you very much. When I played it back, my Naturama theme...
Yes.
Well, I don't like it that much. I mean, Graham's theme for his list sounds great. It's like the Pixies. But mine is just like... It's like regional TV or something, I mean, is there a chance I can get a more sort of hard-hitting thing for Naturama?
Yeah.
Something, okay. Yeah, like Naturama. Naturama. Naturama.
Naturama. Naturama.
Anyway, Naturama. Now, Naturama is the bit in the show where we look over... exciting news stories about wildlife in Sussex. You may recall in episode one, so there wasn't very much. I spent £3.20 on local newspapers, and there wasn't actually... there wasn't much nature news in Sussex. However, it's all changed. In October, there's loads of wildlife news in Sussex, and the reason there's so much wildlife news is because we made it.
The recent heatwave has attracted hundreds of rare moths to the UK.
A flame brocade has been spotted in Sussex.
Like the rare flame brocade moth, a chance sighting in a Sussex garden has...
A whole host of rare spectacular moths.
And they haven't been spotted in these numbers for at least 130
years. 130
years.
You recall in episode one, we went out looking for the Death's Head hawk moth. And what we found instead was the flame brocade. Now, at the time, we were kind of aware it was quite a nationally important discovery, but we weren't aware of how important it was and actually what was to follow. So if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to the second half of episode one. I mean, were you aware it's such a big news, Graham? It didn't seem...
Not at the time.
No,
it kind of crept up on us, didn't it?
It kind of... So what basically happened was after we had recorded episode one, the news got out about the flame brocade discovery. There's The Guardian, Independent, all around with big stories about it. It was all the local newspapers. Yeah, so I'll read from The Guardian here. Patrick Barkham, he's a nice guy, Patrick Barkham. He read his book, haven't he, The Butterfly
Isles?
Yeah, he's a nice guy.
Yeah.
Here's The Guardian. Most exciting for Britain's army of amateur moth recorders is the largest influx of the rare flame brocade for 130 years. With lepidopterists, that's us, suspecting that the purplish-brown moth has established a breeding colony at an undisclosed location in Sussex. Now, look, I need to apologise to Graham here, because what actually happened is when they actually said to me...
Hey!
Yeah, well, when they actually asked for a quote, I said, just put my name to it, that's fine. I didn't really think it was going to be a big story. And so I sent the press release came out, and then Graham said, well, wait a minute. I was there as well. And I said, oh, yeah. So I quickly sort of, So I sort of backtracked a bit, and I phoned him and said, I was there with a friend of mine, Graham Lyons, was there as well. And just make sure he gets a mention. So in The Guardian here, Michael Blenko and a friend, Graham Lyons, first discussed... This is like a friend of mine just happened to be there. So Michael Blenko and a friend, Graham Lyons, first discovered the flame brocade when one turned up in a back garden last weekend. I'd never seen one of these moths... I'm putting a voice on. It's my voice, isn't it? Do you want to put a voice on?
Yeah.
I've never
you
seen
it.
Okay, just me. I'd never seen one of these moths before, so I grabbed my net and went off to find out if there were others nearby, said Blenko. I got my full name. Blenko, said Blenko. So that's The Guardian. Sorry, Graham. It was... when Graham saw that, what do you think of that, Graham?
Particularly liked it when it was Spanish article.
No, it's in the Italian. It's in an Italian newspaper. La Cauda Estati Indiana del Faleni Magreti in Gran Bretagna. You read down, it's all in... I can't read down, it's all in Italian. But
there is one key word there you'll be able to pick out.
Yeah, I just read here, it says, per Il Sussex, Michael Blenko, right? E dal suo amico, Graham... I should have said, I should have called him my sidekick or something, shouldn't I? Michael Blanco and his sidekick.
Yeah, that would have been even less patronising.
Yeah, yeah,
wouldn't
that's,
it?
That's fine. So we've got the garden.
Guys. I mean, I was there.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I haven't said anything, but like. I'm just crew, aren't I?
Yeah, well, you're the guy holding the microphone at the time, but.
This was a freeway discovery,
I'm not gonna phone. Shall I phone back now? It's too late now.
Michael Blanco and his friend and his friend's friend.
So there was a huge amount of coverage for this story. This one here, Mr. Blanco, 40. Right, there's no need to put my age. Why is it important that I'm 40 years old?
I think that's just desserts.
So, as you said, it was on Radio 2, Radio 4. We made BBC Breakfast News. Also, a lot of Twitter action that day. Someone sent me some Twitter links. Lots of tweets, yeah. This guy here, Benny someone, he'd been watching BBC Breakfast, and he tweeted, "There are Moth fans, perverts more like." That's what he said. Hey, my wife shouted upstairs about this, and I'd misheard what she said. I thought somebody on the BBC had called me a pervert on a BBC Breakfast.
Blanco, 40 pervert.
Yeah, Michael Blanco, 40-year-old pervert.
And it was all rather exciting, wasn't it?
But it was great. It was nice to think this podcast has achieved something positive, because I never thought it would, to be honest, ever. That's the end of the news, end of Naturama for this month. I can imagine it won't be that packed again.
It's a tough act to beat.
We've got to do something this month to try and trump that. So,
where are we going this month?
So, we're planning on going to look for fungi at Ebono Common in West Sussex. So, it's a really fantastic site with some really big old trees. It's really, really well known for its fungi. A lot of fungi recorders and photographers go there. Over 1,000 species have been recorded. But the target species is a very rare fungus that grows out of dead wood called the bearded tooth. I'd love to see it. It also has this fantastic colloquial name, which is the lion's mane. And of course, like Graham Lyons, lion's mane, that's why I'd like to see it. Yeah, wow. let's
And also,
there.
Of course, we need to mention we have a special guest joining us.
Of course, Howard Matcham. So Howard's going to be joining us. He's the bryophyte recorder for Sussex. Bryophyte's been mosses and liverworts, but he's also the fungi recorder for West Sussex. Ebono Common is part of a large complex of ancient woodland over in West Sussex, and it's got some strange, what would you call it, rural myths about it. I don't know if you know about this, but...
Go on.
There's a very strange old story that many, many years ago, dwarves were bred at Ebono.
Yeah, what's...
Dwarves were bred at Ebono.
What?
Children, the children were fed, apparently, a diet containing a lot of the berries of the dwarf elder, which was acted as a growth retardant. So as they grew into adults, they were dwarves, and they were then sold on to rich people as court jesters and things like this. So yeah, let's get out there and have a look.
Let's go. And we're rolling.
Okay, so we've come to Ebono Common today to look for fungi and lower plants. So Ebono Common is a really fantastic ancient woodland dominated by beech and oak at this northern end. Lots of dead wood, so lots of dead wood associated fungi. It's also got quite a dense understory of holly. It's well known for fungi, and fungi recorders come here. Over 1,000 species have been recorded here. So it's quite an exceptional site. Today the peace and quiet has been a little shattered with gunfire from one direction and go-karts from another, so it does seem a little bit like we're being hounded or chased down in a deliverance style, but fortunately we should be okay because we've got Howard Matcham with us.
Hello, Howard.
Hello everybody. Hello. Thank you for inviting me here to all this noise.
So Howard is county recorder for bryophytes, that's mosses and liverworts.
West Sussex County Recorder for Fungi recently, and International Man of Mosses, so I hear. So.
Yeah, that's reasonable. I think you could say I'm an all-round talented botanist.
This is a fantastic, Everton is a fantastic place, and it's unfortunate we're here today with World War III starting in the fields over there. But usually you come here, and it's a real nice ancient woodland. It feels really like you're going back in time. It's very easy to get lost in here, which is great. Hopefully we won't get too lost today, but...
A little bit lost.
Let's get lost.
It is beautiful. Some really big trees. We're overlooking a small lake by the look of it. We're definitely
a large pond.
Communing with our inner hobbit, I think.
Yeah. I'll be combing my feet later on.
I'm like, what is this that we've found?
We've got fluted bird's nest fungus. Strange little cups on dead wood.
It's so
there.
Weird because I'm looking at that's an acorn shell, right?
No.
No?
Oh, no.
That is
an acorn shell.
It's so similar.
It's very similar, isn't it? Very similar.
That's a perfect description then. They basically look like an empty acorn cup.
But they have these strange structures inside that look a little bit like bird's eggs.
Look at these here, Matt. Okay. Look inside these here. You can almost see these. You can look down inside the cup here. And there's quite a few here together.
So they're clustered a bit smaller than like.
And so you can imagine that there's two little bird's eggs in there. See that?
Yeah.
Isn't that sweet?
See what you mean? Two little things at the bottom.
Cyathus striatus.
Striatus.
Yeah. So that's striatus.
That's great. So that was a new one for you, Howard.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah, so I'm finding you new species. It should be the other way around.
With these sort of organisms, as I understand it, they're the fruits, is that right, of underground structures? Toadstools are kind of like fruits that produce the seeds.
No, they're not seeds.
No,
spores.
Sorry, spores. Yeah. But the spores do a similar job as a seed would. In sort of spreading around. But underground, it's like thread-like stuff.
Mycorrhizae.
Right, mycorrhizae. Okay, yeah. and that essentially is that like the main sort of part of the organism, and what we see is sort of just the
fruit body.
Yes. Okay.
So it's probably worth pointing out that this northern end of Ebono is where most of the records for the two target species, the two tooth fungi, the bearded tooth and the coral tooth, those records are clustered around here.
Okay, so that's our mission.
They think they're saprophytic, grown out of dead wood, but we should be able to spot them from a distance because they're big fungi, they're pale, they'll be against dark dead wood.
So we should actually get into the wood then, Graham, yeah? We shouldn't be walking on the path, we should split up.
Be going off the path. Off the beaten track is definitely the way forward.
Whoa. Yes, please.
The English name is Queen Catherine's moss. Scientific name is Atricum undulatum, yeah. And apparently Queen Catherine used to collect this and put it in her mattress for to have a soft mattress. So it's retained
soft.
It's retained
very
that soft. Moss. That will dry. You feel how soft
it's so
it is.
Soft, yeah. It's almost feathery soft.
Yeah. I could collect this now, dry it, put it away for 100 years, and then you take it out in 100 years' time, put it into water, it will come back to life, and you can actually see within the cells chloroplasts.
What's that?
The green cells that convert sunlight into sugars.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's
and they will still be in there.
That's quite a nifty little eyepiece.
Oh, the lens,
there.
A botanist can't exist without a times 10 and a times 20 lens.
Can I have a look at something through it?
Yeah. If you take it and you'll see the... You see how it comes to life?
Oh, it's amazing.
When you look at it through a lens.
That's two lenses times 10 in that.
Yeah.
We should probably experience it. Matt's experiencing looking through a hand lens perhaps for the first time.
Oh. It is my first time. And what amazes me is the detail and colour. Everything seems to be sort of, hyper real. Yeah, times 10. The whole experience is times 10.
So you see how you can actually see the structure of the leaves.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. Okay. That was a great experience.
Yeah. Shall we
let's keep going. Michael's found another Ebono classic here.
Oh.
Before I tell you what it is, Matt.
Yes.
Get down and rub your fingers on it and smell your fingers and see what.
Over here, Matt.
Where are we?
Here.
Okay.
Yeah, so Matt,
I definitely feel like a guinea pig.
Give it a bit of a smell.
He's a little fellow. He's nice. He's really surprisingly soft.
Oh my god, it really smells of garlic.
Hey, there
it is. That's amazing.
It's a garlic parachute.
Yeah. Oh god, that makes me hungry.
I know. It's an incredible smell, isn't it?
Oh
wow, great. Two men in a wood sniffing at a mushroom. Good.
So it's like a it's sort of a
that's good stuff.
1.5 centimeters across, kind of brown cap, kind of a bit slimy, and really soft gills underneath.
Very tall stem.
And it's just the most incredibly strong smell of garlic.
That actually is more garlic than garlic, isn't it?
Yeah,
actually stronger than garlic.
More garlic than garlic.
Yeah. But what is it called?
Garlic parachute.
Garlic parachute. Oh.
Right, so we're walking through a very dark part of the wood. The light levels are pretty low. But on the ground here...
Whoa!
Oh, that was close.
What are they?
Under my bag. I said it's very, very low light levels, but there's incredibly bright yellow fungus growing on these... on this dead wood on the ground here.
Really glowing.
Howard, any ideas about this?
Right. Lemon disguise.
What? So this is lemon... Sorry, this is lemon disco.
Yeah, it's lemon called lemon disco. Yeah.
Oh, that's a new one for me.
It's a disco, Marcy. In other words, it's shaped like a disc.
Oh, right. So it isn't named after a discotheque.
No, it's not named after a discotheque.
That's such a shame.
Yeah. If you put it to your ear, you can hear it.
It's a mini nightclub. It's great. I always thought lemon disco was actually named after a disco.
It's got a little stalk to it.
Oh, get away, really?
Yeah. It's really small.
If you look under my times 10s lens, which all good botanists must have.
Indeed.
That's welcome.
And so it's like a toadstool, but in complete miniature.
It is a toadstool, but in complete miniature.
Wow.
I mean, toadstool is just a colloquial name, really, for a fungi.
Okay.
And a fungi that has a stipe or stem and a fruit body, a cane.
Lemon disco.
Lemon disco. Disco in the forest.
Find the dog poo here, Matt.
That's the sort of thing I specialise in.
What, dog poo?
Yeah, tell us about that, Howard.
I'm...
You specialise in poo?
The fungi that grow on dung are many and diverse.
Wow. Yeah.
And I've had several county records from just collecting dung in the wild. Deer dung I've had a county record from.
So what
it's the heat, the moisture.
The heat. But where... Because presumably it wouldn't have been in the animal's body.
Oh, yes, it would have been.
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah, they eat the grass, the spores are on the grass, the grass is ingested, and the spore goes through the gut, which it needs to do before it can germinate, and then the cycle starts again when the animal excretes the... the dung.
So it comes... They grow on the poo, and then their spores go onto the grass
and it all goes
beautiful
through
the cycle begins again.
When you're writing sort of scientific papers, what do you call the poo? How would you refer? Is it feces, excrement? What do you call it?
Just excrement.
You never call it poo?
I mean, I call it dung.
This particular jobby is very offensive to me. Can we move away from it?
This is dog dung. Yeah. And it's already got a mould on the... And that would be really interesting. I'd love to get hold of that. I wake up in the morning, first thing I do is greet my dog. I then go into my study and check my cultures. And then I come back out and wake my wife up and give her a cup of tea. I've got it in priority. Dog, dung, wife.
What have we found?
This little fungus here. Can't even see it.
Oh, yeah, that little chap in there, look.
Oh, yeah.
See this here?
Ah!
I'm going to show you something about that.
Saffron drop bonnet.
Yeah, it is.
This is a great one.
Yeah, beautiful. Can I just demonstrate this?
Yeah.
If I take that out and then break the stem...
My word.
You see?
My goodness, it's like
incredible. Look at
like
that.
The blood has come over my...
Yeah, it's like chilli oil.
Now, that is actually orange.
Wow.
There's some with red, some with black. So you can identify the species by right. The colour of the juice inside.
See how it just broke the end.
Yeah.
Squeezed a bit of the juice out, and it, the most incredibly vivid, colour. Actually, I think maybe we should photo.
And that stains permanently.
Yeah, it is. That'll be on my finger when I get home.
I just
yeah, until I can.
I'd rather I was told that before.
Mike just wiped it all over his face. Yeah.
Until I can look. See, look at that all over my hand.
Strong enough. More raw terror, more stomach-turning shock than you can take. Therefore, be warned.
That brain thing over there. Look.
Oh yeah.
Where?
It's kind of looks like a Jew's ear sort of thing, but I'm not sure it is.
Let's go to the brain.
Go to the brains, Graham.
The brain.
Brains. Oh, all right, I've lost the brain.
Is there?
It does look like brown, sort of slimy brain attached to the side of a fallen.
You're right.
Yeah. Attached to a fallen.
I can't poke the brain. It's like,
yeah. Let's get some brain action.
Come on, give it.
Touch it.
Michael just poked it, and it does very jelly.
Oh my goodness! Like a brain, surely, isn't it?
It's cold.
What
it's slimy,
think, brain,
and
is that
I can't believe how jelly, kind of squishy it is.
What specific name is this one got?
No, it's just got Exidia plana.
Plana, that's right.
So it's in the same genus as witch's butter.
Yes, right.
Okay, so this isn't even in my book. It's that good.
Occurrence throughout the year, but fruiting mainly in late summer and autumn, infrequent.
Yeah, very infrequent.
Is that a tick for you, Graham?
That is definitely a tick for me.
A couple of times before.
Wow, beautiful.
Brownish gelatinous lobes collectively joining into a brain-like structure.
Are you joking?
That's what it said. It said like a brain. So it's, yeah.
Well, so we can come up with our own name for that because it doesn't have an English name.
That's a real Halloween brain sort of. Yeah, what could it be?
Zombie lunch.
That's good, isn't it?
Yeah. Zombie lunch. Yeah, I like that. Yeah. I like that. Zombie lunch. You heard it here first. NaturalHistorySussex.blogspot.com.
We're underneath beech trees where there have been a lot of wind blow by the look of it, and trees have come down, and we've got a lot of dead beech trunks on the woodland floor. And we've had a couple of days of rain, and now we've got a really, really moist microclimate in here at the moment. It's quite warm today, 18 degrees Celsius. And the fungi are beginning to grow.
This is
an ideal habitat. And we've found one or two things that are quite specialist and host specific on beach.
So if you're going for a walk in a forest like this and it's quite mild and there's been rains and you see sort of nearby lots of fallen logs, it's definitely worth having a poke around.
Very much so.
Like a woodland rock pool in a sense.
Yeah, very much
like
so indeed, yeah.
They're melting.
Yeah.
Gratuitous grossness, wonderful grossness going on, where we come across these funnel. Would I be right, Howard? Some are funnel and some are domed.
We've got several species here, actually.
There's
porcelain fungus over here.
Quivering white jelly. It's beautiful. Just hugging the side of this mossy, fallen beach.
They're old porcelain fungi, are they? Yeah. These aren't here though. Yes, they are.
They're all porcelain,
yeah.
Yeah, because there's some young ones coming out.
Yeah, there are.
I mean, they're normally this beautiful, translucent white.
Like this.
Like we got here. You feel how slimy the top of that cap is.
So I'm just going to touch it. It really is quivering like jelly. Oh my goodness. And it is
incredibly slimy.
It's incredibly slimy.
If you do a section of the cap, you can see the gelatinized. Form of the hyphae on the top of the cap.
Oh, I see. Well, so you can, it's like the layer of slime.
Yeah, layer of slime, that's right,
I can see actually a bit of slime almost dripping off the edge of that one. But the colour is so charming.
I remember.
It's kind of creamy white.
They look like jellyfish, don't they? They're really kind of something from the
there's some lovely depths of the ocean. Here too,
young ones here coming up
little
on the side of the tree. But little, here, the OAPs at the top there really are falling apart, look, and they're just melting.
Browned off and go and do your Wizard of Oz.
Any idea what they're
I'm melting!
That's rubbish.
That's awful. Is that what Dorothy says in the Wizard of Oz?
No, he's the witch. He's the witch.
I know he's the witch. So Graham's found some of the infamous Liberty Caps, but they're not actually called infamous. They're actually the Liberty Caps. They're not actually called infamous Liberty Caps. But that's the magic mushrooms.
I don't know where you
are. But yeah, I'm not sure where they are.
The magic mushrooms associated with incredible
hallucinogenic properties.
Hallucinogenic.
Of course.
It's really illegal to collect them and take them home. The genus Inosibi is quite renowned for. Hallucinogenic.
The law changed a while back. It used to be illegal to dry them and to sell them. Okay, then the law changed. It's actually now illegal to have them in your garden. You could be done for possession of a class A drug, I think. A class A.
Just
by them growing your garden, you could actually. They changed the law, which is ridiculous, of course.
PSI. Yeah. Oh well, we can't even find them anyway. So, there they are. that isn't.
So they are quite small. They're sort of. So give us a little description, a little Graham description. How would you describe it?
Well, it's got
that?
Quite a long conical cap with a kind of like a hard sort of nipple on the top.
Mm-hmm.
Can we say that?
Can we say the N-word?
Is that actually the term used in the mycology world, nipple?
It is now.
It's certainly used in the biological world.
It's about 3 or 4 centimetres high and... The conical sort of head of it. Head? Is that the right word? The head of it?
No, that's the cap. The cap is about
1 centimetre across.
Yeah. Quite dark gills. Definitely 2 species going on.
Yeah.
Oh, I think it's time to leave.
Yeah.
I don't think we're welcome here anymore.
We're getting shot at.
Get away from my mushrooms.
So we're back from Ebono Common. Did anyone see a dwarf?
Not one dwarf. No. What did we see? We saw no one at all, really. Just us, wasn't it? It's a nice little place.
Yeah, fantastic.
Beautiful.
Lovely
really
trip.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Sadly, we didn't see the bearded tooth, but we did see a number of other things. So, without further ado, let's get to my list.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. You just made my list.
Okay, so here's our regular feature when I'll talk about my list. So I keep a list of every species of every taxonomic group that I've seen in the UK. And every month on the podcast, I'm going to update on the new species I've added to that list. Now, here's the book where everything's
kept.
Yeah,
so we're seeing
the book for the first time, and then actually the list. I assume it's on some sort of spreadsheet somewhere, but
so how it works is I have.
Well, let's describe the book first, Matt.
So it's a leather bound,
book,
brown, beautiful, kind of like.
That's gilding on. Is this gilding?
Don't touch it.
Oh, sorry.
Look how I touch it without white gloves on.
Got a little sort of a little thing here, is like a bookmark, a little bit of velvet bookmark here.
He keeps touching it.
I'm just touching it.
You can touch it. So
now I see inside it. I'm a little bit let down, to be honest. It's actually quite messy inside.
It's
doodles and stuff and little scribbles and things.
You wanted illustrated script.
It's funny, you see how it's kind of evolved since I started doing this in October last year. So this month's been a pretty exciting month with 37 species new to that list. 4 moths in total, new to me in October. A couple of days after our discovery of the flame brocades, and we found a nigh moth, and we get scarce border straw, and we had quite a selection of scarce migrant moths.
Yeah.
So a couple of days later, we went back down that part of the world and had another look with 4 moth traps.
Four moth traps we had running that night, yeah.
Four moss traps.
So we attended the traps a bit at night, didn't we? And it wasn't looking that exciting.
It was quite a slow night, wasn't it? I think we went back about 10 o'clock and there wasn't much going on in the traps. And kind of, I didn't hold out much hope for the morning, but...
We did have a few flame brockades.
Oh, yeah. A few flame brockades, of course. Yeah,
well, I mean, old news, you know, by then. Yeah. 2 days later, and they were old news. But we were still holding out for a death's head hawk moth. So we went back the next day and sat right out in the grass. There's a big white thing that was instantly recognisable because there's been a lot around. So this is this beautiful sort of mother of pearl white pyralid called Palpita vitrealis. And we put it in a pot. I went to try and get a photo of Palpita vitrealis, and I had a feeling it was going to be flighty. It had that look about it. So I took a record shot in the pot, which I hate doing. I hate moths in pots. I think it just looks horrible. It's a beautiful moth with a load of perspex behind it. It just looks rubbish.
We'll put your photo on the webpage, Graham, so you can all see how awful it looks.
Which proves that it did fly off, and that's exactly what it did. Over a wall, into a hedge, and... I was pretty gutted because, as far as I was concerned, that was the best moth of the night, and I'd just let it go without getting a decent photo. So I legged it as fast as I could.
He was running his little legs around the edge. It was funny. Trying to watch it.
So crying.
His little camera waving.
Yeah. So I grabbed my net and I thought, well, what I'll do is I'll go around and I'll tap the hedge. And I say tap. It was quite a vigorous tap. trying to get this thing to fly out, and if it flew out, I would have netted it. So I worked my way along this hedgerow, tapped three or four times, and was just about to swing my net into the hedge one last time when face to face I came to a crimson speckled. Now, it was quite exciting. I think, Michael, I think you said that I squealed crimson speckles.
Yeah, it was this weird noise because I was on the other side of the hedge, and of course, Graham was trying to find this vitrealis moth. And this really high pitched sort of crimson speckle, and with such urgency that I assumed it was flying past. Or
well, you assumed I'd beat it out.
He'd been tapping his hedge. I saw this. He's screaming crimson speckled, and I actually ran through the hedge to get to him and to find this moth just sort of sat there, just staring at us like. And we'll put a picture on the webpage. But
and it is. I mean, you showed me a picture. And
we talked about it last month, of course, and saying how much we'd love to see one.
Yeah. And, I mean, amazing. And it was just sat there as well. It was just sat there. You know, black, red, yellow. Yeah. It was just a beautiful looking thing.
It was one of these things where I've seen it in the books many times. I've seen it on camera phones, on the internet, or wherever many times, but... It really was. Seeing it in front of you, it was much bigger than I thought
it was.
Really incredible looking thing.
So far, that's my natural history highlight of the year, because it was just so unexpected and so exciting. Anyway, back to the list. So that's four new moths, all of them good. 37 species in total we've got here. So got round to the Isabelline wheat ear.
We know the wheat ears that come through Sussex every year.
Northern wheat ear.
So Isabelline wheat ear. So what's the difference, Graham? You were saying that the way it stands. Is different.
It's got good posture. it holds itself very, very sort of straight.
And you can upright. See that. It's got
long legs. It's got long legs and a short tail. You know, it's a very different shape. A very different shape. And the whole thing is very pale and sandy. It looks like it's come from the Middle East.
Well, it's funny because I didn't know what Isabelline. Do you know what Isabelline means?
No.
And I thought perhaps it was some sort of region, the Isabelline region, because I know there's a. I've seen Isabelline shrike before.
I've seen that.
And there's also an Isabelline bear. And you can have Isabelline penguins as well, but not actually a species. Actually, if you have a pale penguin, it actually means of a greyish yellow colour.
Okay,
you're gonna love this. The reason it's called the folk tale behind it is the origin is it comes from the name Isabella. Okay, and she was the Archduchess of Austria, daughter of Philip II of Spain, as you knew, Matt.
Of course.
Now he laid siege to Ostend in 1601, and she said. Right, Isabella said, I will not change my undergarments until the city is taken. So they want, she said, oh, you know, as a protest, she wasn't going to change her pants. And unfortunately, the siege lasted for 3 years. And so leading to this off-colour word for overworn underwear.
So Isabelline.
So Isabelline means the colour of dirty pants. Did you find that in the wheat ear? Did you think it was...
It was exactly that colour.
It was exactly that colour.
I feel slightly disturbed by that.
But I think you've got to be careful. I mean, you know...
Dirty pants wheat ear.
But isn't that a strange story? It's probably total rubbish, of course, like your dwarf story earlier on, but it's a nice story.
I will be using Isbaline much more. Back to the list. Mammals. Now, I added a new mammal, which was Dormouse. So I went out with the Dormouse recording group.
Everybody loves now, the Dormouse.
I wasn't happy with this at all. What? I mean, well, Graham, you're going to the dark side now. What are you doing, this Dormouse? I saw your Dormouse pictures and how cute it all was. What are you doing? The little beetles are fine, well, the spiders aren't, but other things. And then he just went totally soppy with all this, I can't believe how cute it was.
You'd
be buying a cat next.
Yeah, and I'll be putting in a little Dormouse costume.
Say, ignore curmudgeon Blanco.
It's awful. It was shocking.
I don't get cute things. I don't get cute things. But it was quite funny because, you know, there was a couple of, I think the day after, I was down a pub and there was a couple of mates kind of having a bit of a row at the bar. And I just thought, I loaded it up on my phone, loaded the picture up, and I said, have a look at that. And they both stopped fighting instantly, looked at it, and went, oh.
The calming
influence
of the Dormouse.
Brilliant.
If you want to try and stop people fighting, you shun the Dormouse. I just won't change my pants for 3 years. And that's the way I'll do it. That's my form of protest.
Is a blind blanco.
That's what they call me. No, it's.
I haven't seen Dormouse. A Dormouse, you know, it is a tick. So I've added Dormouse to my list.
What a gorgeous tick. It's so gorgeous. And a mammal. You don't often get to add
new mammals to this. There aren't that many in the UK.
How did you come to see?
So there's a regular recording group of volunteers that go out at West Dean Woods, and they're all licensed to handle Dormouse because it's a protected species. You've got to have a license, and how they do that is by monitoring a number of boxes. And that's sort of September, October is the time when you're more likely to see them before they go into full hibernation. And I think we saw about 13 or 14, including the one that I took photos of, which we'll stick a picture of that up, I think. He's being converted. What was quite interesting about this one we saw, it was one small one. The first one we saw was the only one out of the 13 or 14 or so that we saw that was in a torpor. You know, it was kind of wasn't quite fully hibernating, it was just sort of sat there. But all the others we saw were very active, but most of the others were in small groups, and I think they were keeping each other warm by their presence.
You're breaking me out of this story. Here they are.
But we saw the largest, the largest Dormouse.
Keep each other warm.
I think we saw the largest Dormouse that many of the people had ever seen. This very big female, and its weight it was more than three times the weight of the first one we saw, and it really was a porker.
Yeah, how big? I mean, I saw the photo in the hand, so they're like,
so that one in the hand was 12 grams, 12 grams, and it was about as big as a Kinder egg.
Oh, well, that's good. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
You can relate to Kinder Egg.
Everything now to novelty children's
gifts.
The Kinder scale.
Yeah. Now, and then this big one, it was probably about the size of a Twix.
So nature sightings for October. Now, a lot of the sightings have been reported on various websites, and actually, they've been mentioned already by Graham. So the some of the top moths which have been seen included crimson speckled, and we mentioned the dirty pants wheat ear. We mentioned that as well. There were a few other things. There were still a lot of butterflies. Of course, a very warm month, still a lot of butterflies on the wing. When I last checked on the 21st, there were common blues, brown argus, meadow brown, red admiral, speckled wood, small copper, small white, painted lady, large white, and peacock still around, and a few cloudy yellows had come across. Yeah, all still right at the end of October. On a warm day, there was still these butterflies out and about. And I can imagine now the temperature's dropped a bit at the end of the month now, it's probably the last we'll see of some of those guys until 2012. But
who's usually the last to be seen? Red Admiral?
Yeah, it's probably the Red Admiral. Yeah, yeah. It's probably maybe some late peacocks. But the Red Admiral is it's probably hanging around the latest before it tries to hibernate. The Sandhill Crane, there's a third, I think the third for Britain, turned up, got blown off course by a big hurricane. It's an American species. the helicopter, it turned up in Scotland, and then it started moving south. Lincolnshire, Norfolk, Suffolk. We were kind of hoping it would kind of come to Sussex, but people we know went to Suffolk and saw the bird, and we got that. We have the Sandhill crane call here. Look, where's the that noise actually drives a bit. It actually sends shivers down my spine. That noise, because I actually had an experience with a sandhill crane last year in a rescue centre. I was over in Montana and went to a rescue centre because I really wanted to see mountain lion, and they had this really old mountain lion, a cougar, in there. And all the animals had been hit by cars or been whatever, these wild animals, and they'd all they're all looking pretty worse or wear, to be honest. All quite nothing was moving. And I walked down past the cages, and there's a sandhill crane, and it was just sort of sat there. The minute it looked up and saw me, it went absolutely crazy. Honestly, it went absolutely... It just started leaping and actually going for me. It started... It was trying to get over the fence. Yeah, don't do it again. No, because it was... And I was... I still have my camera up. I'm just backing away. It was really, really aggressive. And when this guy turned up in Scotland,
you thought it was the same one.
Yeah, and started heading south. I thought he was coming to get me. I locked my door. I tell you, every night in October, I thought this thing, his pecking at the door, and then this that noise. Perhaps I make it some phone calls with that noise on the end.
Getting closer.
Yeah. Anyway, it was in Suffolk, and it flew up higher and higher, and headed off. And hasn't been seen since, to my knowledge. I think it's...
I was going to go on Saturday, and it was last seen on the Friday.
Yeah, so yeah, there you go. So that's the show for this month. We'll be back again, hopefully, next month. So from me, goodbye.
And from me, see ya.
A bientôt.
Mushrooms.